You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of October 30th, 2019. And this week we say, sayonara, wild goose.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. It's been a while. I've been out.
Yeah, it's fucking life shit has reared its ugly head.
Yeah, I was traveling for work also. I did actually, by the way, we wouldn't talk about it yet, but I saw group stages for the League of Legends World Championship. There was Chinese fans en masse. And they were fucking the loudest, most like outrageously awesome fans of at an esports event I've ever seen. It was super cool.
I mean, this is their moment, you know. Everyone is, this is a whole nother podcast topic in and of itself. But the shit that's gone down, not only just in esports or video games, but also geopolitically with like China and industry at large.
Yes,
and just how much it's weird because video games were a big chunk of the lightning rod of that. You know, it was the NBA and Blizzard, basically. So, like, it was just kind of a weird confluence of events.
God, the NBA, I forgot about that.
Yep, that's what they hope that...
Fascinating to me that, like, the NBA is huge in China.
That is kind of crazy. I mean, I didn't know that it was that much more popular than the other American sports.
Yeah. Or soccer, like that never took off?
I mean, I imagine soccer is really popular, but I for whatever reason, it's just, I never thought that basketball would be a really popular game over there because it just seems so, it's a pretty like specific sport. So I don't know.
I like the fact that we're at a point now, though, where everyone just has to confront the globalized world we live in, you know?
Yeah, it's like, oh, whoops.
It touches everything, just like a goose. We're talking about a couple of video games we've been playing lately.
That's what happened. A goose stole our podcast. They're out there somewhere.
Both of these games, playable on the Switch, which I played them on, perfect games to play while traveling.
Yes, very, very... contained games. We're talking about Untitled Goose Game and Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Which do you want to start with? The Goose Game?
Let's start with the Goose Game.
So I was really excited about Untitled Goose Game when I first saw the announcement. Mm-hmm. But, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, but I actually very honestly misunderstood what this game was going to be. Uh-huh. I thought it was going to be like Octodad. You know, I thought it was like, I'm just going to be a goose and I'm just going to run around. I'm not going to have to do anything. I'm just going to fuck with people and like honk and bite children, you know, like things I've actually seen. Man, by the way, one of my favorite memories is watching a kid be chased by a goose at a public lake when I was a teenager.
Oh, you mean a real kid?
It was an actual kid. It wasn't me. And this kid went to go feed the goose. And the goose...
That's his first mistake right there.
Like, he put his hands out. But it's like... So in my mind, this is the events that took place, right? This kid came to the lake to feed ducks.
Uh-huh.
And he sees a goose. And what is a goose if not just one really large duck, right?
You know, also known as King Duck.
King Duck. So the kid gets the bread out and is like, I'm going to feed this duck, right? And then the kid puts the bread, like, in his hands out to the goose, right?
Uh-huh.
The goose sees the bread, wants the bread, right? And sort of starts to waddle out of the water, at which point the kid's eyes get huge. This is so vivid in my mind, Scott. The kid's eyes get so big because he realizes how large the goose was. Like, the goose is a fucking, this is not just a small, like, duck. Like, I don't know, he was a young kid, so maybe... There's some like optical illusion shit going on.
Like straight up, Sam has gotten in this phase where if one of us is down the other side of the table from him, he'll be like, "You're far away," or like, "Yeah, or, you're, like he's you're starting small. To
understand." Yeah,
yeah, like he perception. Understands perspective now, and yeah. So like a kid probably had no clue how big right. that goose actually was.
So this
was.
Goose waddles out of the water to get the bread. The kid yeah. freaks out and runs, but makes the fucking rookie mistake of holding onto the bread. Right? The goose starts to chase, and at this point, I'm pretty sure the goose has now lost interest in the bread, and it's just like, the hunt is on. You know, like, the instincts have kicked in, like, this kid is running, like, there must be good reason to chase this kid. And just like in Untitled Goose Game, the goose, like, spreads its wings out and starts yep. chasing this kid, and this kid, I have not seen, like, a 3-year-old run that like fast just like away from this goose. Oh my god. And then like the mom grabbed it and like tried to attack the goose. It was good times. Anyway, I mean, that's a goose game.
But I mean, I think you know, as much of a tangent as that is, I think it is indicative of why this game had a fundamental widespread appeal.
Yes.
Because there was a base level physical comedy aspect to this game that was just very attractive. It looked silly, and it, at the same time, it also looked very realistic. Like, this is a good-looking goose. Like, yeah. It moves like a goose. It looks like a goose.
Yep.
And so, like, you could just see the chaos was hilarious, and people were attracted to that.
I also think some people have made fun of the name, and I've heard the name insulted, but I actually think it's an extremely approachable name for people who don't play a lot of video games. Like Untitled Goose Game, that's silly and weird. I'm gonna pick it up. But what I think is clever, this is not a silly or frivolous game. This is a genuinely puzzling, interesting game. And in fact, the best description that I've heard described of it is that this is Hitman, but you're a goose. Yeah. Which I
agent
think is
47.
Yeah, your
whatever.
Agent. Yeah, agent 48 is actually just a goose, you know. And but like the you know from the onset, at first I was like, I was getting frustrated because I was like, where is everybody? I have a list of things to do. I thought I was just gonna like honk and bite children. Like, what am I doing here? And then you start to realize, like, well, no, you actually sort of have to finagle the environment in such a way as to like solve puzzles. And it's pretty quick into the game when it's asking you to solve something that's more complex than just, you know, move item A to area B. You have to, like, get this guy to do this thing and then time it in the right way to make him, like, jump and fall down or something like that, you know? Like that, and you have to start thinking about it. And there are even moments pretty early on in the game where I just wasn't moving with my character and just sort of sat there trying to puzzle through the process that I'd have to take in order to execute on the ask.
Yeah. I mean, I think you put it out there perfectly, which is this is a lot more, this is much more of a traditional skill-based video game than it would appear to be.
Yep.
Perhaps, well, I mean, I guess this is probably the crux of the conversation about the game. Is that to its detriment, or is that a good thing?
I think that there are a lot of people that have been playing. Chrissy Teigen plays the goose game, apparently.
Hashtag relatable.
There's been a lot of people, I think, who have come to Goose Game that might not have otherwise come to something like Hitman, for sure, or certain puzzle games like this. And I think that they have found it enjoyable. My guess is most people will not finish Untitled Goose Game. Like, they won't beat it. Because I think you actually do end up hitting some pretty tough walls where it's much more of a arduous process to think it through. Like, you really have to just, I mean, I'm not really quite sure how to put it other than you have to think some of this shit through, and that takes time, you know? Yeah. It's not just, you can't just trial and error it, you know? And even, it's not entirely intuitive that you can reset the environment, and sometimes you have to reset the environment if you've, say, broken too many beer mugs and therefore can't take a beer mug somewhere or something, right? Like,
what do you mean by that, actually? Like, did you like hard reset environments, or
so there's an there's a button essentially hidden in the menu that lets you reset the environment without resetting your progress.
Interesting. I had no clue.
Yeah, so there have been a couple of moments where, you know, in the beginning when I thought this was just a wild goose chase, if you will, I was just, like, I enjoyed dragging shit into the water, into the river, so I was just, like, throwing random shit in there, and then eventually I was like, oh, there's stuff for me to do. I need to, like, bring everything over, I didn't know where things were, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know how to do this. I locked the gardener out of the garden, but I needed him in the garden in order to do something, but I didn't know how to, like, get him keys again. So I was stuck, essentially. The reset button will let you reset that entire environment without resetting your progress, thereby letting you, you know, reestablishing all of the items are in their original location when you're first trying to solve the puzzle. So it's very much like resetting a puzzle, you know, like, okay, here are all the pieces back again. Now you can try it in a different order and see what happens.
I had no clue. And I had definitely got to spots in the game where the beer bottle puzzle where I did smash all of the steins by accident, but then eventually if you wait around long enough, the person goes into the restaurant and gets more out and puts on the table. Like,
okay.
I think, I don't know if this is a fact or not, because I never was able to successfully break any of the puzzles irreparably, but I wonder if the game actually is repairable in any stage, even if it is arduous to do so.
I think it probably is, because I think they probably encountered people that had that same experience. The option to reset the environment is, I mean, honestly, it's hidden. Like, I was getting a little bit frustrated until I figured out that that was an option to do.
Because
the last thing I want to do is just wait for the world to fix itself, you know, when I'm, like, trying to solve a puzzle or whatever. Yeah.
It is much more of a clockwork world where, you know, people would maybe liken this to Goat Simulator or like you said, Octodad, things that are much more fumblecore jokey types of games. But this is much more of, there's a consistent, there are routines that every character go on that have a lot of subtlety in them that you actually have to pay attention to. You know, this person's going to turn left here, they're going to pick up this thing, you know, there's going to be another person in the way here when you're running, so you have to think about that. There's just, there's way more traditional video game here than I expected from it.
I mean, and that even was the stealth mechanics, you know?
Exactly, yeah. It's like, oh, I better hide behind this wall because this person's looking for me. It's like, you have Metal Gear Goose is happening right now. The narrative that I heard around this game was, oh, I really love that this game exists. I'm really loving the fact that it's out there and people are playing it. I don't know if I'm liking playing it.
Yes, I think that's accurate. And even from the people that, like, you know, there's a lot of coworkers that I talk to who play video games, but maybe don't play or aren't looking for the more, like, arduous games or more challenging games, have said that they've enjoyed being a goose. But I don't hear a whole lot of praise for, like, oh, I really enjoyed the difficulty of X puzzle, or I really enjoyed whatever. And, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to know. Like, I get the sense that people are liking Untitled Goose Game. Like, they're enjoying its existence. But, yeah, I don't know how many people are enjoying solving all of the puzzles, or certainly not, maybe not solving all of them.
Right. So how did you finish all of the there's about, I feel like there's maybe like four different kind of environments. You're in this small town that, as you accomplish your tasks, which are basically just cause mischief.
Yep.
You know, oh, like, steal some things from the store, take this person's keys, make this person wear the wrong hat. Just like, just various just goose assholery that,
I mean, the best one is getting the lady to put the bow tie on you. I thought was pretty satisfying. Yeah. And then you're like, haha, motherfucker, I got a bow tie. I'm a sweet looking goose.
So did you do the last part where you're going through like the model town and all of that?
So no, actually, I am right now. I've just finished the pub one.
Okay.
The pub
you're basically section. You're a few minutes out of the end of
is
the
it
game.
Like Control? Is it like the model town and you show
it
up
actually
just...
it is kind of funny where it's like it's a model of what I imagine is the town that you're in, but it's just, I mean, whatever, I guess spoilers for Untitled Goose Game, but it's just funny because it's the thematic and mechanical apex of the goose's destructive tendencies, because he's stomping through this model city as kind of like as a huge monstrous goose.
Yep.
And then you go back out of the town and you're back in the real town and you're kind of just, you know, still stealing things. But the game concludes with the goose writ large causing havoc in this tiny town that is powerless to stop it.
That's amazing. I love it.
I definitely recalibrated my expectations once I figured out what I was actually playing.
Right.
And after that, I enjoyed it much more, where I was like, oh, this this is essentially a stealth game. This is essentially a Hitman slash, you know, Clockwork style puzzle game.
Yep.
And if I slow down and stop trying to play it like Goat Simulator, I actually have a much better time.
Which is so funny because it's like I have to stop acting like a wild, unhinged goose and actually puzzle this shit out, which is, it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably less silly fun than I think I wanted it to be. I'm glad it is what it is because it feels like it's being a bit more respectful of the genre that it's in, you know, and more respectful of my time.
It's a surprisingly serious video game for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also just think just visually speaking, the tone of the game reflects that seriousness where it's not super wacky. The game is quiet. The music itself is quiet. The fonts are very humanistic and tasteful. There's nothing extravagant about this game at any point. And even at the end of the game where you are doing a, you know, a kind of a funnier sequence, it's not a super wacky game. It has that very kind of, it has a very dry sense of humor, both mechanically and aesthetically, which again is differs from the rest of the kind of Fumblecore brethren that it sits next to.
For sure. Yeah. I also just shout out to the music as well. I think the music's really good. It's all like weird classical versions.
Yes.
But I like it quite a bit. I think I was actually, there's a podcast called Art of the Score with this guy, Dan Golden, I think worked on the game as well. So. Shout out to that.
Wait, he did the music for this game, right?
He did. Yeah. So he is part of the crew that does Art of the Score, which is another great podcast they talk about scores to like film and video games and stuff. Mostly film. Man,
old school. That was he's been around since we started this thing, man.
Dan Golding has been he's like a internet, I don't know what you would call someone like him.
We knew him before
us.
He was famous.
Basically. Yeah. But House Us, I mean, they're a small team, and I think they made a really cool product, and it seems to be succeeding, you know.
So. Did you read those articles where this was basically a joke started from a game jam, and then they eventually, after years of work, turned it into this?
It feels like a lot of great games started because of jokes.
Yeah. It's good. It's satisfying to see that come out.
I also, in a weird way, this is like proof positive that sometimes the way that you skin a game really does matter in terms of public interest, you know, because this really could have been almost any other untitled game, right? Like, I don't think it's necessarily critical that it's a goose.
Other than having people who maybe wouldn't have come to, hey, here's, you know, techno spy game number 358, you know, it would have just blended into people's background. This set it apart, even though it's mechanically very similar to other stealth games.
And maybe it's proof that you can take an initially dumb joke idea and then like apply it to a different thing, right? Like, what if you were to say, I'm going to make a goose game. It's going to be called Titled Goose Game, and it's going to be an RTS, you know?
Right.
Sure. I mean, maybe that'll work. I don't know.
Can't wait for the eSport Goose Game.
Yep. There you go.
Okay. Next up, another smaller independent game, Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Woo! Sayonara Wild Hearts.
We saw this. Was it E3, this E3 or was it last E3?
Well, I think it was this past E3.
Man, what a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember seeing, this was one of the few games at E3 that when they flashed it up on the screen, I was like, I am instantly going to play this game.
Yep. And we did. We played it.
What kind of game is this? How would you describe this? Is it like Rez? Like, how do you best describe Sayonara Wild Hearts?
That's a great question. I would probably describe it as a music rhythm game.
Yeah.
But really, you're just... It's a playable music video. It's like a playable concept album, you know? Like,
yes, yeah.
The amount of challenges that the rhythm-based elements set for you are, for the most part, like, self-directed. It's not, like, a crazy critical experience where, like, you need to hit every beat or you're going to be judged super harshly, although you are judged super harshly, to be fair.
That is true. It's kind of weird. We should dig into that. But, yeah, I mean, the other way that I looked at it as... I mean, one of my favorite classic games of all time is Tempest, where it's that kind of tube-based game where you're flipping around a circular arena and dodging items and so forth. And so it's kind of that combined with...
What was that game that came out like a couple years ago where you're like a bug? It was super difficult. It was a rhythm game. You know what I'm talking about?
I do have kind of... I have an inkling of what you're talking about. I remember it. Did it have something to do with like pinball as well?
I don't remember that part. Bug. Oh, this is Thumper. Another bug. It's called Thumper.
Oh, Thumper. Yes. Came okay. I was thinking about that other bug game that you were like a pinball bug. Yes. Yeah. Thumper. Yeah. Very. Yeah. Thumper. Rez. Any of those sorts of music games or Audio Surf.
Yes. Oh man, that's a great callback. Whew. What a great game, man. I played a lot of Audio Surf back in the day.
And I think you can see the inspiration of those games in this. But this is a more even though it is conceptual, it is a much more contained thing. It is telling a very specific story with these soundtracks, with these narrative interstitials. Yeah, I mean, well, where else do we start with this game?
I think that Samogo, the designers of Sayonara Wild Hearts, I think they are low-key the best development studio in the business right now. They're so... I legitimately...
Take that, Nintendo.
I loved Sayonara Wild Hearts. I'm so glad that I loved it, too, because I wanted to love it, right? But, like...
yeah.
I was telling Nicole this when I was trying to explain why I was because I was like, oh, see, watch, check out this music video. And to her, like, I think to most people, if you were to just show them Sayonara Wild Hearts, it looks like a weird music video with like animated girls and stuff. And you're just like, well, you know, it's not really like I'm also playing it, but it feels like they get it. Like if you were to ask someone, I want you to take a concept and I want you to make it into a video game. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of hurdles that they would have to take in order for them to justify why you would be translating that into that game space, right?
Yeah.
But Samogo did this with Yearwalk, which was they took a Swedish oral fairy tale, essentially, of yearwalking or like arsgying or whatever, and made it into a adventure game. That 100% works both as a playable fairy tale and just like an enjoyable game. And they did it with Device 6 when it came to making a game that was literally a written noir game, right? But they made it into a text-based puzzle adventure game. And those two things, it was both of those things at once, but wed so effortlessly and worked so well, right? And the music was just killer on both Yearwalk and Device 6. Right. Sayonara Wild Hearts feels like the same thing to me. Like they took a concept which was, let's take a kick-ass pop album and make a story, like a cool narrative story around it, and then let's make it a rhythm game. I think in most people's hands, that would be bad because you would have two different concepts, right? A playable music video and pop album, and the rhythm video game part, and it would just feel sort of like roughly smushed together. But it feels like Samogo is just really unlocked why anything should be playable. Like anything that would not normally be playable can be made playable. And I think they prove that that's true if you put in the work to justify it. And that's what Sayonara Wild Hearts feels to me. And I think that's what a lot of their games that they've made thus far feels to me.
I'm glad that I'm less familiar with their work. Like I recognize the names of these games, but I don't know how many of them I've actually played, if any. But
you should play Yearwalk. It's one of my favorites. In a weird way, it reminds me a lot of Senua's
oh, yeah,
sacrifice.
Senua, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like before its time, you know, in a weird way, because it's like, it's a fairy tale that takes that fairy tale-ness very seriously.
Right.
But makes a great adventure game out of it.
That's why I'm glad to see that this is a continuation of things that they've been doing, because it definitely seems like the most audacious version. I mean, this seems like the biggest scale thing in terms of just flashiness and integrated music and all that stuff.
Well, I think this is the first one that they've published with significant support. Like, I think Annapurna published this one. I don't think they've published any of the other games.
Yeah. And I mean, and I think it shows, because there's a certain amount of, well, and also at the very end, spoilers, there's like a, when you work with a big publisher, every once in a while you get to randomly work with Queen Latifah or something.
Yeah, dude, I saw that. I was like, that's so cool.
So it's like, it is a good example of why publishers can add value.
Yep.
Because the whole time I was like, man, that's a really good narrator. I wonder who that is. Where have I heard that person before?
Yeah.
And then at the end when it's like narrated by Queen Latifah, I'm like, oh, that's who it was.
Yeah, exactly. Also, it feels like without ever really hearing her, Queen Latifah has always been the voice encouraging me to you know, kick butt and take care of myself. And you know what I mean? Like,
can I somehow get her on my alarm clock?
Yeah, man. If I could just have her giving me like 10 words of wisdom a day, I feel like I'd be way happier.
But I mean, I think if I'm recalling it correctly, I think it's either the second or third stage. It's when you have the first kind of motorcycle fight with the opponents that you're chasing throughout the whole thing. The music just swells up really nicely and ebbs and flows based off of the battle that's happening. And you're going through the city really fast and making these really quick turns and doing battle on top of motorcycles and stuff. And it's like, man, this is just a very... there were moments in this game that felt like moments in a That Game Company type of game.
Yep.
Where it's like, this is just a triumphant moment in this game. Yes. And they really executed this extremely well.
Yeah. Every time that you're facing girls on motorcycles, it feels really good. And I think what helps a lot as well is all of the animations are animated as though they were, they move like ballet artists, you know, like they had
like
these
a dance fight.
Yeah, it's like a dance fight, and it's extremely satisfying to watch them dance fight / motorcycle shoot without like skipping a beat and to the beat. You know, it works totally well. I also think it's really courageous and is executed really well the way that it shifts perspectives pretty consistently and surprisingly. Like, even in that first section, those are one of those first moments where I was like, whoa, weird. Why am I all of a sudden I'm in a first person view instead of, and now I'm in a side view and I'm like ducking down and now I'm back into first person. Sometimes you're in a car, sometimes it's like an on rails shooter instead. Yep. Like, it really switches genre while you're playing through it. And it never focuses too heavily on one of those things, because it's not doing those things to really like only focus and test you. It's not like this is the first person shooter part. It's like, no, this is just a cool different way of seeing the world, so here you go. Now let's get back to the like fun music experience.
It's the difference between playing a game where mechanical excellence of a specific type, whether it's jumping or shooting or puzzle solving or whatever, is the point of the game, versus we're using the mechanics to tell a story that is the point of the game. The narrative is the point of the game versus the actual mechanical pedagogy of the game. And so it doesn't go into that. It's not a precision shooter or a bullet hell game, even though there are elements of that in it. It's just those elements are in service of having different tracks on an album, basically.
Yep. Yeah. There is a level I like in particular. I think it's called Parallel Universes, where you're like fighting this one lady and then you like cut her in half and then she's two ladies. Yes.
Yeah.
And as you play through the level, they like snap their fingers. And every time they snap their fingers, it changes worlds and it transitions between them. And I was like getting frustrated at first, and I was like, okay, maybe I'm hitting my limit. And then I, as I played it again, I kind of really like better got it. And yeah. The ideal way to play through that sequence is by basically sliding your motorcycle all the way to the left and then all the way to the right and then all the way back to the left again. And you actually don't have to pay attention to the obstacles that are appearing because you shouldn't be reacting to them. You should be moving with the music. And if you move with the music in the right way, then every time it's like beat, snap, beat, snap. Yep. And every time you hit a snap, you're hitting the far right or left of the road. And every time you hear a beat, you're collecting a heart. And so you just this natural movement of when you're like actually in it and moving to the music, it's so incredibly satisfying. And I've actually replayed multiple times a lot of those levels, and I replayed the entire game in arcade mode, where it's just like one long, you never take a break. I honestly feel like this is a game that I'll continue to play throughout the year because it's just calming. It's like a great way to listen to a music album.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I don't really listen to albums that much anymore. One of the byproducts of Spotification of music is that you just can jump around to whatever
shuffle
you want.
Play, so, baby.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to a cohesive work from beginning to end in the same way that you used to, but this is one of those things where you could. My few criticisms of the game actually revolve around that, which is, one, there were times where until I gave myself over to the rhythm, I was like, just, I think there was a level where you're riding on that deer. And it's kind of like the speeder bike sequence in Star Wars where you're just kind of darting in and out
of
trees.
That's a good one, man. When like all when they enter the giant wolf mecha.
Yeah. And I thought that was a cool thing, but I was playing the game like a video game versus more of a art experience. And I was getting frustrated because I was trying to play it like a precision thing, and it's not super precise. And like you said, you really should be doing these like bigger sweeping movements rather than this fine tuned, I'm going to hit every single thing and you'll be just as successful, if not more. And so it would be interesting to see one, if they could have a mode where it doesn't just restart you when you slam into something.
Agreed.
Because it's almost a shame of breaking the flow of this beautiful game of like, man, I've had to do this 15 times in a row. It was magical and now it's just annoying.
Yeah. I think going back to the difficulty aspect of it, it's very difficult to get a gold rank in any of these levels. And in order to do that, you actually do find yourself intentionally killing yourself to replay a section of the map on the reset.
Yeah.
And like find where those like hidden gems are and stuff.
Yep.
That's not an ideal way to play the game. And in a weird way, I would just kind of wish they had taken out that, maybe even just take out scoring entirely or lower the difficulty. I don't know. I'm not quite sure who is that person that wants to take this so seriously that they get a gold on everything in order to like really prove their skill,
and I don't know why they just didn't flip flop the game. Why not start people with the arcade endless? And so there's a mode that only unlocks after you finish the game of you can play the game. There's, I don't know how many sequences there are, like 14 or 16 sequences or however many tracks there are of the game, but you can play it like an album where there's no score in between. There's no having to click into the next menu to play the next level. It just flows like a musical album. Why not just reverse that?
100% agreed. Yep.
Yeah, from the jump.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what the last mode is, but there's another hidden mode that you cannot get until you've gotten gold and everything. And I'm extremely annoyed by that because I don't want to have to get gold and everything. And also, I feel like it's so antithetical to the point of the game. And in fact, I'm pretty sure in one of the last levels, Queen Latifah's, because she will grade you at the end or whatever.
Yeah.
And Queen Latifah will say perfect no matter how well you've done. and I feel like that's kind of the message of like, it doesn't really matter how hard, like, because the character, she's like lost love and then she's basically how Stella got her groove back, the pop music video game.
Right.
So like when she gets her groove back, it's like, whatever, shit happens. You're perfect. Treat yourself. You do you, girlfriend, kind of thing. Like uplifting message. That is kind of antithetical to I'm judging you silver ring over and over.
Right, exactly. You know? Yeah, like bronze, sorry.
Yeah, like, come on, really? Like, now I gotta like redo that and like get, I don't know.
I would be very interested to learn why, because there must be a reason why it was structured that way. And there's, in my mind, there's no economical reason, because you buy this game, it's a standalone game. You either, if you play through it, great. It's not that, it's not like getting you gold gives them more money or something. It's
right.
It just seems way more logical to give people, in what is in my mind, the better experience first, and then if you have hardcore people that want to opt in to the score chase, let them do that afterwards.
Yeah,
it's just I wonder, it was a very strange thing.
I wonder if they were like, some people just love this dope track, let's let them replay it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like at that point, then like why not?
But if you play it from beginning to end, it takes like an hour tops, right?
Yeah, it's a short album, and most of the tracks are like what, a minute, you know, 90 seconds, if that. Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I wonder if what they could have done is just have it be album mode, but like let you know at any moment you can stop and replay this level, you know,
or
like it'll keep going, but if you want, you can back out and replay any of the tracks that you've encountered thus far.
Right.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where I would like people to play this, but what I would like to do is first play it myself to get them into arcade mode, and then hand them my Switch and say, "Okay, now play this.
Now play this
through.
This fucking sweet pop album." Yeah, yeah. I like this game a lot, though. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and also just, we talked about it briefly, but extremely artistic, just visually.
You gotta like
very
fucking
interesting
smooch people at the end. It's great.
Oh man, yeah, that's another That Game Company style sequence where they call back to something that happened earlier on.
Well, and even the music, just, you're replaying all of those sections, but they're like effortlessly weaving together again. Like, what a great soundtrack.
Yeah. I mean, two very surprising, very different, but in similar ways very focused independent video games.
Yep.
That, you know, made a mark later in the year, when a lot of games are either getting delayed or pushed out or whatever.
I hope more people give Sayonara Wild Hearts a try, because I actually forgot that it came out when it came out, and I'm just a little bit concerned that it hasn't got as much attention as it deserves.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully the end of the year will be good for that, because people will be rediscovering the best of the year. And I mean, you know, if we were to expand our list to be larger lists, you know, it's a guaranteed that it would show up in there. And I think it's a pretty strong contender for like one of the better games this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been a slow year, and this is probably one of my favorite games of the year thus far, because it is just that pure, simple enjoyment of it. And it's a great excuse to listen to like a really good pop album.
And I think people will, this game feels like a game that can be rediscovered once it gets more buzz on people's game of the year lists, because it is so easily attainable. It's on it's going to be on different platforms, and you don't have to invest 50 hours into it. I mean, this is something kind of like Untitled Goose Game that I could see a broader appeal than, you know, trying to convince someone that Outer Worlds is the thing to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we just need Queen Latifah to be tweeting about it and stuff.
Come on, Queen Latifah.
Come on, Queen Latifah.
Help us.
Do your duty.
You helped us repair our broken heart. Now.
You have one more job. Call upon your dragon queen.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. Come on down. Feed the massive fucking ducks that we have here. listen to old podcasts.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Yes, indeed. Ciao.